call to order the special workshop of the board, and we don't do the pledge till later, so we will start with our workshop, but I would like to get a consensus that we will be moving the public comments to the beginning.
To the end.
I'm sorry, to the end. Yeah. Is that what the board would like to do?
That's correct.
Okay. We will be doing that. If you have public comments, if you'll get your slip in, we would appreciate that.
I think Ms. Schultz will be reading our normal intro on that.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. You ready?
Thank you.
Can I make a suggestion for us? I know tonight we're going to have a lot to discuss. Can we wait until the meeting to take people's speaker slips in case they see something you want to speak on? And we'll meet. I'm going to give everyone a chance to speak about what's going on tonight.
We can do that. I do want to make sure that we have enough time for both the presentation and the public comment. Right now we have 5 speaker slips, and I think if with the timing that we have planned, we would definitely have enough time to get through the speaker slips at the end. I'd be a little worried if we get some throughout the meeting that might crunch down the amount of time that we have for both.
You know, I disagree with you because there's been so much community output on this, and I think we all need to hear from you. And tonight would be a good chance for them for us to hear.
We'll try to be flexible and accommodate all of that, but we've got 5 so far, and we should be able to handle all 5 that so far that have been submitted.
Anyone else that puts in the speaker slip? Okay, thank you.
Okay. Welcome to the meeting of the San Dieguito Union High School District Board of Trustees. If you wish to speak regarding an item on the agenda, please complete a speaker slip located at the sign-in desk and present it to the secretary to the board prior to the start of the meeting. When the board president invites you to the podium, please state your name before making your presentation. In the interest of time and order, presentations from the public are limited to 3 minutes per person per topic. The total time for agenda items shall not exceed 20 minutes. An individual speaker's allotted time may not be increased by a donation of time from others in attendance. In accordance with the Brown Act, special meeting public comments are limited to items on the published agenda. Unless an item is placed on the published agenda, no discussion or action may be taken by the board. In compliance with Government Code Section 54957.5, agenda-related documents that have been distributed to the board less than 72 hours prior to the board meeting have been available for review on the district website or at the district office. As a courtesy to all meeting attendees, please set cell phones and electronic devices to silent mode and engage in conversations outside the meeting room. Thank you.
Thanks, Joe. We will now turn it over to Mr. Miller to begin the presentation.
Thank you. Good evening and welcome, Board of Trustees and our community. First and foremost, I want to thank the board for the opportunity for district staff to give you an overview of special education services within the district. And also to thank our community for being here tonight to learn more about our special education services. As we go through the presentation tonight, I would like all in attendance to please keep in mind that this is a general overview of special education services offered within the San Dieguito Union High School District. As we all know, special education is very complex, and it is important to understand the premise of special education as outlined under the Individuals with Disability Education Act is that it is designed to provide services to address a child's unique needs. These needs are based on individualized assessments with individualized goals and services being developed through an IEP process. Tonight's presentation is not intended to get into the complexities or to address specific student unique learning needs, but is to provide, again, a general overview as the services we provide across the district. Lastly, as we go through this presentation tonight, I would like everyone to please keep in mind that special education is a service, not a place. With that, I'd like to make some introductions tonight. Tonight, my name is Mark Miller. I'm the Associate Superintendent of Administrative Services. We have Meredith Wadley, our Director of Student Support Services. We have our program supervisor group that we're going to get to, and we will introduce as we go through. And we may have some site admin team trickling in as we go. However, they are actively preparing for the start of school. And so we'll see if a few of those folks are able to make it. Okay. I wanted to start off tonight and talk a little bit about the California Special Education Task Force, because I think it's important to bring this to the forefront as a little bit of context around what's been going on in the state of California for the last 5 or 6 years. So in 2013, the State Board of Education convened a special education task force, and it was tasked with evaluating the status of special education in the state to examine best practices not only in California, but throughout the country, and to propose recommendations for strengthening our special education system. And the reason why it came about is because students with disabilities statistically are not doing as well as general education students across the state as far as statewide testing. And so this task force was convened, and they made some recommendations. Now, I will get this right by the end of the meeting. Their key focus and recommendations focused on a multi-tier systems of support as a best practice for all schools, alignment of services to align general education and special education as to one system, increase stakeholder engagement, ensure students are college, career, and community ready, teacher preparation, and finance reform. So those were the premise of what that task force recommended, and it was a very long document. It was a very long document. And through those recommendations, there's been courses of action at the state level within the last couple of years to try to get some of these initiatives implemented. And so as we go along tonight, you're going to see that those are some of the same themes that we are focusing on here within the district, and as well as some of the same concerns that our community has expressed within the last couple of months around some of these same themes. From that, there was a great quote that came out of that document, and it says, "In a coherent system of education, all children are considered general education students first, and all educators, regardless of which students they are assigned to serve, have a collective responsibility to see that all children receive the education and the supports they need to maximize their development and potential so that they can participate meaningfully in the state's economy and democracy." So not just special education teachers, but all educators have a collective responsibility. With that being said, looking at how we can unify special education and general education, we set out on a course last school year to look at how we can integrate general education and special education. And one of the things that came out of this was it needs to start at the top. And it needs to start at the top around how our administrative services is organized. And what we decided to do was we decided to combine some positions so that positions could speak to both general education and special education, with the ultimate goal of building on our multi-tiered system of support framework, increased site support, specific hiring of administrators with special education experience, and to increase parent participation. So with that reorganization, these are the areas that serve under administrative services. And I didn't put this up there so that you could see all the things I do. I put it up there because they actually align with each other. So although our program supervisors are overseeing special education programming, they're often working with educational technology. They're often working around Section 504. They're often working with home and hospital instruction, counseling and guidance system, our early intervention system. So that was the notion of the admin services reorganization, to pull all those into one house. And so as you see tonight, we have a new structure. And that new structure starts with me as the Associate Superintendent of Administrative Services. We have Meredith Wadley, who's here tonight, who's our Director of Student Support Services, who's primarily overseeing special education, parts of Section 504, our social workers, and our health resources. We have the Director of PPS and Alternative Programs, Rick Ayala. He primarily oversees our Student Support Services and Attendance and SARB. And then we have a new position, which is Melissa Sage, who's a coordinator of Student Support Services, who's going to be overseeing our counseling, guidance, and Section 504 program. It's a unique chart, right? Because the arrows go in multiple directions. And they go in multiple directions to remind ourselves that we're one system, that we're all working together collectively for the betterment of all students. So with that restructure, the other area that we wanted to provide was increased site support. So last year, we had program supervisors that were driving around to multiple school sites, putting in a lot of windshield time, to be quite honest. They were spending a lot of time in traffic trying to get from site to site to site to site, and were primarily sitting in IEP meetings. And we wanted to flip that model. We wanted to get our program supervisors in classrooms working with teachers for the betterment of students. And so to do that, we lowered the amount of schools that they are now overseeing. So as you look at this sheet right here, you'll see that most of them have anywhere from 2 to 3 and that they're put geographically. So that's going to decrease the amount of drive time for them so that they can be in and out of classrooms and working with our site administrators. We added an extra program supervisor this year to specifically work with our adult transition program. And then we also have a program supervisor this year who's going to stay back and work with Meredith in the district office to work on our professional learning support, our policies and procedures, our alternate dispute resolution to help us address issues before they become larger, help with the due process, compliance, and our residential treatment center program. So real quickly, I'm just going to say your name, if you could just stand up and wave. Cherie Benet.
Welcome.
Rachel Page. Rebecca Gallo. Erica Munoz with a K. But we're not going to violate the
I
board.
Thought, I thought so.
You emailed me. You're the wrong person, right? With a K.
She asked if we could change it. I said, nope. Not officially, but I will tonight. I'll make sure. I'll make a mental note. Courtney Cook, who was just recently hired and could not make it tonight. Tiffany Hazelwood, who can also not make it tonight. And then we have a psychologist on special assignment. And the other thing I want to note is that your site administrative team is also your special education support. That through your case carrier, through your assistant principal, or through your principal, we have additional resources. All right. So as I mentioned, tonight's goal is to provide a general overview. It's not to hide data, it's not to suppress data, but it's just to give you a general overview of how students are doing around special education. Do we provide those handouts, Joe?
Yes.
Okay. So on the table over there are additional handouts for additional data sets and additional data trends. In addition to a website that has all the California state data. So if you want to go through and find more data, there's the webpage there so that you can click on schools, you can click on districts, you can search to your heart's content on various data sources. For tonight's purpose only, the idea was, again, to provide a general overview of how our students with disabilities are performing. So overall, students with disabilities graduate at a higher rate than all students in the state for this district. The achievement gap for students with disabilities compared to all students is 12%. So when you look at our overall graduation rate versus how our students with disabilities, there's about a 12% achievement gap. When you look at the state achievement gap, it's actually at 17%. And when you look at the county achievement gap, it's at 20%. So we've managed to close that achievement gap. And so one question that many folks have is, okay, it's 86%. Does that mean we have a 14% dropout rate for students with disabilities? And that answer is no. Our dropout rate for students with disabilities is around 4%, while 10% of our students receive a certificate of completion. And even through that 4%, that is cohort data. So that's at the end of the 4 years. That's how that's calculated. But we have many students that return for the 5th year to receive their high school diploma. I just was not able to pull that data on how many return for the 5th year to continue towards work towards their high school diploma.
Mark, you know, yep. This data, I don't think this is good data, is that why don't you just compare our district against itself in the last 10 years so we can see where we're going? Because I don't think we should be comparing ourselves or everyone else should be comparing us to us. Are we achieving this? How much have we achieved? Because I don't care what anybody else does. I just care about our kids.
Okay, I think that's fair.
I think this is misleading. Because, you know, obviously San Diego County, you know, the Unified, it's a huge school district, and you're comparing us to them, you can't do that. So next time, or if you have the data now and you can look it up, is let us know where we're at 10 years from now, how we're doing there. Okay. Just because I got to tell you something, this means nothing to me as far as how we're doing.
Absolutely. If I'm here in 10 years, Mo, I would.
I guess I'd like to say back.
Back, okay.
Is that that would be more effective for us to see where we've come and where we're going and where the gaps are. If we're not, then you know, I'll give you kudos if we're going up.
Okay, absolutely. I think that's fair. Thank you. When you look at the CAFS data for math, again, I provided handouts tonight. Overall, our students, compared to the statewide average, I'm going to go on script. So the California State Assessment Program is one measure to mark student progress for English, language arts, and math. I'm going to state one single measure. With the new testing program, more students with disabilities are taking the general test, while a smaller subgroup of students with the most significant cognitive disabilities are taking the California Alternate Assessment. This is a change from the old testing program, which offered a test called the CAPA. And so the CAPA was an alternate test, and we had a larger population of our special education students taking the alternate CAPA assessment. The next two pages, again, were intended to show overall student scores to the CAS as it relates to state, county, and district-wide data. We did not drill down to specific sites. Information for two of our comprehensive sites are over at the table, and we are aware that math for these two specific sites, I think Torrey Pines and La Costa Canyon, while we know we have work to do, our students with disabilities are scoring above the county and statewide average. So we know that math is a specific area at those two comprehensive sites that we are not scoring well. Staff is very aware of that, and we are working to shore up and to provide intervention measures.
Mark, how long has that been happening, that they haven't been doing well? How long has this been a dip now? Is this
no? I would say in general, math seems to be an area where students with disabilities are struggling. Even when you look at statewide, when you look at countywide, even you look at national data, students with disabilities are struggling.
But I
in the area.
No, I don't care about that.
Absolutely,
I don't care about our students. Is it a dip here because you've been here for a year? Are you saying back a couple of years?
What I'm
you
actually providing the data for the year before I was here. Embargo data. For this year's CAS is going to be released in the next couple of weeks. I can share with you that we have actually increased in the area of math and ELA from last year for overall.
How much? Like 1%?
Well, we can't actually talk about it publicly yet.
Okay. I could just share with you that.
To assess what you're getting at, because unless we have data, then we can't see where we have an issue where we need support.
Well, I'll tell you right now, we have challenges in math, and we need to shore that up, and that's the intent of our staff, is to shore up that area of math.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
So for some areas, like graduation rate, that is something that we can look back over a long period of time when we're looking at CASP. It's only been around for a few years, and so we'll only be able to look back, you know, since we've had this one particular assessment.
But we've had other better, right. Like he said, right. Assessments, so it should be apples to apples.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's where you should get our assessment information.
I think it's also important to note that we have around 450 students who qualify under the category of specific learning disability and have unique learning needs in the area of reading, math, and or writing. If you were to scroll to the back of the PowerPoint for the definition of specific learning disability, you will see it is a deficit of psychological processes involved in understanding and or using spoken or written language and may manifest itself in an impairment in the ability to listen, think, speak, read, write, spell, or do mathematical equations, adversely affecting the student's educational performance. As such, students who have specific learning disabilities are receiving specific services to address those unique learning needs, and progress is being monitored for a student's goals and objectives. If they have a unique need in the area of math or ELA. In addition to these assessments, as part of IDEA, students receive a battery of assessments every 3 years, one of which focuses on a student's ability to read, write, spell, or complete math calculations. From these assessments, individual goals and objectives are developed and progress is monitored. Again, I just want to reiterate, this is a broad general overview. I'm going to scroll through, and there's math. ELA. Okay. The next slide. So we have achievement and we have compliance. So the other area that special education gets measured in is around compliance. And so the state has 16 areas for which our special education programs are measured in terms of compliance. So as you go through this slide, you're going to, I tried to pull out some areas in which we scored well with compliance, but also to explain areas that we can improve in these specific areas. So indicator A is around from parental involvement, and that involves a checkbox at the end of the IEP indicating where or not, whether or not parents believe the district facilitated parent involvement during the IEP process. In attending the parent forums this year, one such feedback that I received is that some parents believe that they were not aware of this box and that the box was checked for them. And so that, And so that our IEP teams this year are going to be made aware that they need to advise our parent groups of this box and to ask specifically if they would like that box checked or not. That's a learning for us, and that's going to be a primary area of focus. Post-school learning indicator talks about 99.38% of our former students who had an IEP and no longer in secondary schools report having post-secondary education or employment. That's fantastic. However, the way the state asks for this data is a little bit flawed. The way the state asks for this data is it's incumbent upon the district to send out an email for all of its former students and hope that we get a response back telling us how they are doing. Well, I will share with you, those that are responding back are typically those that are in a college or university or those that have a job. We typically don't hear from those that are not in either one. So this data set here is a little bit off, and again, I heard that through the parent forum, and one of the things we're working on this year is how can we create a measure that will truly help us measure how our students are doing post-secondary. So that's some of the work that we have to do around that. And the other two is just I want to make sure that the board is aware that we met 100% compliance on developing secondary transition goals and services, and that we met 100% compliance on when somebody requests an assessment, that we're doing that assessment in a timely manner. And again, that's based on CaseMiss. CaseMiss is data that's uploaded from SACE, if you're familiar with special education. It's how we monitor and track all of our IEPs, and every December 1st, the state pulls our data, and that's how the data is measured. Moving on. So there's been some questions around settlement agreements and around litigation. So very, very, very briefly, I want to talk about due process complaints. So if there is a dispute through the special education process, a family or the district has the ability to file for a due process hearing. Under public law, they must file a request for the Office of Administrative Hearing. And most recently, there was a case that now requires a district to file on a family if a parent has not signed an IEP and there is believed to be a denial of FAPE. That just actually came out 2 years ago. Through the due process, there's actually a few steps. There's a resolution, which is required. There's mediation, which is typically with an impartial judge. And then you move on to a formal due process hearing. I will just state that first and foremost, the district does not like to go to due process hearings with families. It burns relationships. It's not really good for both sides, and it's much better to solve it at the lowest level. However, this process is in place because disagreements are not always able to get resolved at the lowest level, and this will show you an example of that. So throughout the state, due process hearings have increased, you know, within the last 3 years. And I don't know how many. So they've gone from a little over 3,200 to they're close to about 4,500. Many folks will speculate. Yeah.
Question.
Yeah.
What drives that steep rise?
Well, I was going to say. So there's some speculation that the economy is better. That people can now afford an attorney. That's one speculation that is out there in attorney community land. There's just general disputes, so there's really no reason. Just we know they're up. And so when you look at due process hearings, the question always is, well, who usually prevails? So again, this is overall state data pulled from the Office of Administrative Hearings. Typically, it ends in a split decision. It ends in about 46% of cases end in a split decision, with the district prevailing 40% of the time and the student prevailing 14% of the time. So one of the factors that goes into, you know, whether to move forward with the due process is it can consider around cost. So once a due process is filed and the district moves forward and attends a hearing typically costs the district around $35,000 to litigate on behalf of the district. If there is a district prevail decision, the district does not pay opposing counsel attorney fees. If there is a student prevail decision on all issues, the district is required to pay for 100% of the student attorney fees. If there is a split decision, the district is required to pay for attorney fees for that issue in which it lost. I will share from a previous experience in another district that we won on 19 issues and lost on one issue and ended up paying attorney fees of around $75,000 for a four-day hearing. So money can come into factor, but at the end of the day, it's about relationships. It's much better for us to resolve at the lowest level and to work with families, which is why we have Tiffany Hazelwood now in that position at the district level to help work through some of our differences before we get to a hearing, or even before we get to a filing.
So how has she been into your, basically saying she's like a mediator, how has it been with her now?
Well, she's been on the job for 2 or 3 weeks, and I will say that
she's got one good one coming up.
We actually have a hearing that's coming up, and we're doing our best, as always. It's a confidential matter, but on some of the other issues, we are trying to reach out to resolve those before we get to a filing.
I'm going to tell you, so most parents don't want to file because they know their kids are going to be in the district a long time, and you're talking about filing, that the kids in a holding pattern, is that most parents want to resolve this amicably because they don't want their child losing out, you know, especially when you're looking at a 6 or 7 year time here in the district. So I think it's kind of unfair to say it's because of rising cost of using attorneys.
Now, and I would say the district typically we want to resolve as well. I think it's a two-way street. So when we looked at the reorganization, we said, how can we dedicate a person to help us with that? How can we have someone to help reach out to sites or that families can reach out to so that we can get in there and try to resolve this before it goes to the next level?
Well, why have that person? Why not have the person that's already there that reaching out with them saying, how can we mediate this? Is that maybe to retrain your staff?
And we do, and we do. And so that is a focus for us. However, we know, I mean, we can all agree that sometimes IEPs can get contentious, and sometimes it just takes that third person to come in there who has not been a part of that to kind of look so they can look objectively at both sides and try to resolve the differences.
Serve the families, we survey them later so we can see how we can do better.
Absolutely.
When is the survey done? Because you're talking about the government doing it, but what about us doing our own survey pattern to the parents?
What kind of survey would you like? I mean, what's the question we're trying to get at?
I guess, how are we doing? That's my question, as you know.
I think we've known from the last couple of months that we've got a lot of feedback that there's perception we're not doing very well. I think as we move forward with this new reorganization, I think it'd be great to survey the families in the spring to ask, you know, we've had this restructure. Our focus has been on customer service. We're trying to provide additional support to the site. How are we doing?
We also have our LCAP survey, which we do,
right.
And that goes out to all families, and it does ask questions correct of whether students are in special ed or not.
And again,
we'll be able to see the pattern of responses on that.
I'm asking for something that's about our district from us, because I'm going to tell you something. You're talking about this reorganization, but in nowhere have I seen any input from the parents in this reorganization. Is maybe some of this isn't working, or did you ask about the input of the organization? Is instead of moving ahead, is that that's what they?
Well, I'm actually hearing a lot of yeses in this room. So I've heard the last 2 months that it's not working. So Mo, if you can provide me evidence in the last 2 months to the contrary, where folks have been coming to the board to tell you it is working, I would love to hear that, because right now I've heard for the last 2 months it's not working. So we've made an adjustment.
Right.
And as of July 1st, we have a new reorganization.
Okay.
So as of July 1st, we have that new reorg, and I'd love to hear at the end of the year how we're doing.
That's all I'm asking for.
Yep, absolutely, okay. Absolutely.
Thank you.
So as we go through, you see that parent DuPont, so despite the fact that the state numbers are going up, ours are pretty much staying the same. And I apologize, I'm not the mathematician. That should say 0.6, not 0.06. So when I copied it from my Excel spreadsheet, it should say 0.6, but less than 1% of our families are filing for due process. When you look at the district file, again, less than 1%, 835. Again, we are required to file in some of these cases. And when you go to total complaints, again, we're at 1% or less than 1% of working with our due process filings, which I think is very, very good. There was a question around settlement and legal costs. And so I decided to, again, give a general overview of settlement and legal costs. And when you look at this, over the last 3 years, the settlement and legal costs have gone down. I was not here for 13, 14, and 14, 15. I cannot explain why that number went up. But I will share with you that this number has gone down. An interesting phenomenon is typically when you look at special education data around legal fees, when legal fees go down, settlement agreements go up because you're settling rather than going to hearing. Ours have both actually gone down. That, again, I believe is a testament to sites working with families to resolve issues before they get to the next level. And again, this is our general overall legal fees and costs. When you look at our special education budget, it's our budget for the last 3 years. You will see that our overall expenses to operate our programs have increased. Most specifically, you're going to see that salaries and benefits have increased. This is due to an increase in wages, but also we have increased staff. We have increased staff at our sites, and we have brought more students back to the districts, and as we have developed new programs, we've added staff to sites. As you will note, I mean, there is a note up there. There is a decline in the area of books and services. But for this year, we've made it an effort and a priority to evaluate the needs around curriculum. We have brand new curriculum for the adult transition program. As we move into the next generation science standards, our special education teachers are going to be involved in that around curriculum. As we look at ELA, math, and social science, again, we're meeting with our teachers, asking what their needs are so that we can shore up those needs.
Mr. Miller?
Yep.
I have a question. So in our adopted budget, our salaries have gone down in both cases. Is that related? I'm not sure if that represents number of people or the type of salaries, but I'm looking between 16-17 and 17-18.
Yeah, we did have some retirements, and so there's some retirement savings in there.
Okay,
and then
so it's not lowering the number of people, right, but the amount of...
Right.
Okay.
And I don't think I have... Have we gone over the slide with the total special ed number of students yet?
I don't think we have.
No.
Yeah, so
no,
you'll see a drop in the total number of students served as well.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
So one question came up around governance and how is special education governed within this district. Well, we belong to an organization called the North Coastal Consortium for Special Education. It's our SELPA organization. And it's composed of 14 districts in the North San Diego County. Each SELPA must have an administrative unit, which is largely it's an entity that receives the funds and it's responsible for dispersing funds. And the overall, let me see if I can do it. There we go. They help coordinate special education programs and student placement. They monitor compliance with state and federal mandates. They help develop policies and procedures. And they have an active community advisory committee, from which we are very fortunate here in San Diego to have three of our parents on that community advisory committee. It's very unique in that we are called a multi-district SELPA. There are other organizations out there that are a single district SELPA. So when I was special education SELPA director in Irvine, we were a single district SELPA. We were responsible for all of our own special education programs and services. But here we are multi-district SELPA. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Meredith Wadley, who's going to give you an overview of the continuum of services. I always stumble on that word. On the continuum of services for San Diego.
Thank you, and thank you for the opportunity to do a little instruction on special ed. I was out of the special ed department for 2 years, so this was good for me to kind of get back in it because I was on the gen ed side of the house. Some stuff has changed and some stuff hasn't, so I'm excited to work forward. So when we look at the continuum of services that we have in special education, we look at there's a wide range of disability levels. And when we talk, we'll talk a little bit about the 14 disability categories of 13 of which we look at from the secondary perspective. It's a very wide range. So we're really looking at how do we support our students with these big differences, and how can we provide the best programs. We look at from mild, moderate, all the way to our more severe, which could be physical or emotional severity as well. We look at we break down the disabilities into 14 categories. Again, we'll go over those categories. We serve a continuum of services for our students that are services within our district as well as outside of our district when we're not able to provide any to meet the needs of the student. And services that we look at that we're providing for students are always determined by an IEP team. There is no outside entity that comes in and says, yeah, you guys have done a great job, but no, you're going to do this for a kid. So we really, it's about the IEP team process, and I know that Mark has stressed that a lot, about working with parents and really trying to collaborate as a team. It's a multidisciplinary team. There's always a general education teacher that's asked to really present and talk about that student in there, in the IEP, and what they're doing in the classroom. Any of the service providers, if we have occupational therapists, physical therapists, if we have adaptive PE, all of those individuals should be a part of that team. And we really want to walk away with a document that helps guide that student through their educational process for that year, with goals and areas that we're going to work on that we can address and manage within the classroom setting. It's always been interesting to me to take the approach of this family were to move tomorrow and they moved out of state or out of county, I want a document that when another district looks at it, they can say, I know exactly what it is that this student needs. Even though we might know the student, we might have had a lot of time with that student, we really need to make sure that the contents of that IEP document really reflect what that student needs. In IDEA, it says that children who receive special education should learn in the least restrictive environment, which means we need to try our best to find an opportunity for them to participate as much as they can in the general education setting. For some students, it's limited participation because of the level of disability. For other students, it's maximum participation with very minimal support in special education. So again, it varies from student to student. Under IDEA, we have 14 disability categories, and there are slides that give a better explanation, and there's slides 35 through 40 if you want to look at them at the back. I didn't want to have to go through them all with everyone, but you can look in deeper if you'd like. We have autism, cognitive impairments, deaf and blindness, deaf, developmental delay, and again, that wouldn't be something that we would deal with here in San Diego. That would be something the elementary district would work with. We have emotional disturbance, other health impaired. That can be a wide variety of things, although I think predominantly a lot of us think of attention deficit disorder or ADHD. We have hearing impairment, speech and language, specific learning disability, multiple disabilities, which means it could be a combination of any of those, orthopedic impairment, traumatic brain injury, which I hate to say we're seeing a lot more of because of concussion syndrome, things like that. So those all that falls under traumatic brain injury. And then visual impairment, which is including blindness. And that's important to note, too, as Mark talked about working with ourselves or working with the North Coastal Consortium for Special Ed, when we have students that have a disability category that's very rarely seen, and when I share some of the data with you about our students that are being served, sometimes we do have to use our SELPA and partner with other districts in order to meet the needs of a student. So if we have one visually impaired student in the district, we might have them go to Carlsbad, where they have a SELPA-run school that serves now 14 or 15 students that also have a visual impairment, and they can better be served in that school setting. So it just depends on what the student needs.
Meredith, I have a question.
Yes.
On the developmental delay, ages 3 through 9, at the age of 10, does that go away? Mm-hmm. Or why are we not seeing it?
Well, we don't qualify a student under that category. So at that point in time, by the time they get to 10, they would determine then, is it another disability category, or is it really a developmental delay? I can use a personal experience to maybe better explain that. My grandson was diagnosed as developmentally delayed. They have since changed that diagnosis to intellectually deficit because they really can see that he's not going to make that mm-hmm. progress that he should. So it just depends. But the nice part about it is that when a family is struggling with their child at home, right at the age of 3, and we know, and a lot of pediatricians help and guide us to that, they will recommend that we work with the school district. So our feeder elementary district, some of our families have been working with them since their children were three, mm-hmm. and they'll work with us, some of them, until they're 22.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. This is out of our CASEMIS history, and CASEMIS is the California Special Education Management Information System. And this is our disabilities, intellectually deficit, hearing impaired. We have, they listed as hard of hearing, deaf, speech and language impaired, visually impaired, emotionally disturbed, other health impairment, orthopedically impaired, specific learning disability, multiple disabilities, autism, and TBI. And so you can see the trends for us in the last 5 years here. And what's interesting to note on this, if you look at autism, autism has risen significantly throughout the state as well as throughout the United States. But in our district, we have maintained, we've seen it over in the 5 years, we've had additional 25 students, but we haven't really seen the increase that we've seen across the state, which I think is unique, just a unique data point to look at. Other health impaired, we've actually decreased over the years, and I believe that that's because we're looking at more interventions of what we can do within the general education setting in school, so that we don't have to look at special ed as the last resort to help support a student, but we've really tried to embed more programs in our general education setting in order to better support our students.
Is this percentage of students that are going outside of the district that were originally in the district?
Or this is all students. This is all of our students, yes.
Okay.
This is everyone, yes. And the other data point that you see a decrease as well would be that of the speech and language impairment, or SLI. Again, adding more programs and services, having reading intervention classes in our 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade, wherever we need those, we believe that that has helped with decrease some of our numbers that we can work with. And then there's other that are, there's a more physical or social-emotional connection that we may not be able to really make a lot of progress. But the more we can do marrying general ed, the less we might have to see students going into the special ed realm.
So I know the population went down, but now they're building in the cell down near CCA, and obviously Pacific Trails, we built that new school. Is that, do you see that trend going up with our new building for all of our new homes and new families coming in?
I will say that is impossible to predict because we don't know who's going to move in, but I will share with you, I know we don't like throw out statewide data, but statewide it's around 11%. So about 11% of the population receives special education services within the state. So you could probably...
So we would naturally anticipate.
Yeah, we anticipate 1 in 10 of those folks.
Let's see. Next is our programs that we have within the district and then how we relate that to non-public programs. I think it's important to note that every IEP that we draft is an individual education plan. So if you look at every single student we have, we really have 1,300 plus programs in our district because no IEP is the same. They're all drafted specific to what that one student needs. So when I look at it in that respect, I think, wow, that's a lot. But they really are individual plans for students that help individual students to be successful in whatever educational program that they're in. But we do have some programs in our district where we're able to cluster students that have similarities and provide them support. And I've listed those programs here for us today. We have the Learning Center, and the Learning Center works with a variety of our students that are in the general education curriculum but need additional assistance. We also have additional adult assistance in that program. We like to have that staff with adults, anywhere from one adult with eight students, and that includes the teacher and instructional staff. So we try to have that ratio of a 1-to-8 in that particular program. We have the Social Emotional Academic Success class, or the SEES class. And that program works with our students who have significant emotional issues that impact them in their classroom setting. Could be stuff that carries out to home, comes back to school, whatever that might look like for them. They also struggle with self-regulation in the classroom, might need to have some behavior intervention plans, and may struggle with not being up to grade with their academics. So they might need additional foundational support as well as they're needing the social emotional support. And in that particular program, our staffing ratio is about 1-to-4, so one adult for every four students. And that program also has one of our ERMS therapists, or educationally related mental health providers, attached to that program, because there are times when students, they may come in already having a bad day, in the middle of the day they're going to have a bad day, or at the end of the day, in order before we send them home, we want to make sure that they are emotionally stable to do so. Then we have our Middle School Learning Academy, which was new, and that was over at DeGaino Middle School, and those students, inaugural students that came into the program are now matriculating to the high school, and that will be at La Costa Canyon High School. And those students are students that we actually had, or they came from, there are elementary feeders. It's important to note we have 5 elementary feeders. And these are students that were actually in non-public programs in the elementary schools that we brought back to us into our district. So we have brought these students from one of the more restrictive environments, which is a non-public school, away from their neighborhood peers, or away from peers in their district and with others. And in some of our cases, we have non-public schools that are 30, 40 miles away, that we now were able to bring those students back. And we actually had those students are integrated into some general education programs with some creative classroom work. Our teacher works with them inside the classroom setting and then does some independent work with them outside the classroom setting. And then we have Seaside Prep. I'm somewhat fond of Seaside Prep because this was my baby back in the day. Seaside Prep was, again, a program that we created in order to address the needs of those students that we were putting in non-public schools for mental health reasons, and also looking at when students were transitioning from a residential treatment facility, what would a step down look like? And so Seaside Prep, Torrey Pines High School graciously hosted us, and we have done a great job in bringing students back or preventing students from going to non-public schools. Seaside Prep predominantly has students that are college-bound students struggling with school. Some of them are really just over school, but they're really bright students that just can't regulate their emotional piece. And once we have an IRMS therapist that's attached to that and there to help those students, and that staffing ratio tends to be about a 1-to-7. We do have instructional support as the number goes up, and we're able to meet the needs of all college-bound students in that program. I think we can teach everything in there with the exception of foreign language, but our teachers are credentialed to teach everything but foreign language, and students are mainstreamed out on the campus at Torrey Pines. They've been great to work with. Our next program is the Functional Life Skills Program, which is FLS. For some, they may have known it formerly as severely handicapped, and the Functional Life Skills Program is designed to meet the educational needs of students who have significant developmental and intellectual disabilities, and these would be students that would be our non-diploma track students, and students that would be with us till the age of 22. And that ratio is a 1-to-3 ratio, which does not count in the event that a student needs to have a specific aid that works with them for specific reasons. So whether they're medically fragile, there's some other other issues that go on with the student, whatever that might be, that the IEP team has determined through assessment that the student needs a one-on-one aid, that's not calculated into the formula of how much instructional support, so that's a student might have one in addition to what's provided to the classroom. Our next one is Coastal Learning Academy. Again, Coastal Learning Academy was one of those programs that we looked at where are our students going when they're going out to non-public schools and how can we bring them back. And Coastal Learning Academy serves students with a variety of needs. CLA currently serves San Diego students and non-San Diego students. We do have some students from our SELPA that contact us to ask if the students can come and work with us. These, again, are typically high-functioning, diploma-bound college prep students that can meet under any one of our disability categories but need a little extra support and provide support in the setting. There is not an IRMS therapist that's attached to that particular program, but we do have psychologist support and IRM support that's available on the campus at Canyon Crest Academy that would support those students in need. And again, this is a program where we have students who are out in the mainstream in the classroom. We've done a bit of a flipped model where we actually have general education teachers who come in and teach a section in the CLA program itself for courses that are somewhat more rigorous and they need a little bit more individualized instruction. So we have brought the teachers into the classroom that reduces the number. So a biology class, a regular biology class, if it's going to be 32, that might be a little bit too much stimulus for one of our students, but they certainly need to be in biology. So the biology teacher may come into the CLA classroom and teach the biology class. And that's been a great partnership and worked out, and we will have 3 teachers on board again for providing general education instruction in CLA this coming school year. Our Transitional Alternative Program, which has had a lot of attention lately, so I think most everybody knows that our TAP program, it serves our students that are in the, they're not our FLS, our functional life skills students, but these are our students that are non-diploma bound students as well, but they have higher functioning needs, a lot of community-based instruction, and a lot of real-world, real-life programming that goes on in their program. We also have the ratio in there for in our TAP program is a 1-to-4 ratio, again, not including any 1-to-1 instructional aid that might have been deemed appropriate by the IEP team. Students in our TAP class attend either Oak Crest Middle School, Carmel Valley, La Costa Canyon, and Torrey Pines. And so many of our adult transition students that are going through this year that will have been in either our FLS program or our TAP program, so that you can know that what the continuum is there. And then there's our adult transition program, which we just recently moved up to La Costa Canyon High School, so we're encompassing those three classrooms up there, and Cherie's got the team getting those classrooms ready because all their stuff was shoved in one room when they got delivered, so I thank her for that. This is our program for our students 18 to 22, regardless of the level of their need. They're all included in the program. The ratio, again, for that program is a 1-to-4, again, not counting whether or not a student needs any instructional support that's been deemed by the IEP team as a 1-to-1.
So what is, I have two questions here. So what is the walkthrough so we can see the 18 program, because we promised them a week ago walkthrough? Another thing is, I was surprised, it was at the back-to-school days with my son yesterday, are they going to have back-to-school day, business day, so they can get acclimated to the district and see, you know, where, what La Costa Canyon is like, and walk around and see the campus, and they can see who their teacher is, where they're going, the students themselves?
So they will have, as soon as the room is ready, they're still actually doing some, they're tearing out some stuff in some rooms, and we're still moving some teachers out of the rooms that we're now going to occupy. So the goal was, and I know Cherie, they met today or yesterday, today. They're trying to get in there to get their rooms ready so that they can invite the students and their families to come in and see their classrooms and where they're going to be. They wouldn't necessarily do any orientation on the campus, per se, because they're probably not going to spend a lot of time on their LCC as a campus itself. A lot of their instruction is more community-based. We're looking, again, at those courses that we can get them enrolled in at MiraCosta. They'll be looking at, some of them will have jobs, which we'll talk about in a little bit as well. And then what does that look like for their mobility in the community? I know that's been one big conversation that we've had about when we decide where ATP is going to land for the long term, what is that going to look like as far as transportation and what those transportation needs might be?
See, I disagree with that because I know how my son is. He wants to know where he's at, what's going on at the school, what the location of the school is, and a map, and just saying, okay, here's your class. Is that they don't know where the restrooms are, or that, you know, it'd be more beneficial for them if you had a business day for them.
I didn't say we weren't going to have one. We're not ready to have one.
Not ready to have one?
Yeah.
We're actually a week and a half out, because that's why I'm wondering when it's going to be.
We're moving as fast as we can.
Yeah. We'd like to know, too.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And you're going to, and the goal is to get it done as soon as possible. Yeah. So all the outdoor landscaping was done, so that's all completed. And now it's just a matter of getting into the rooms to set up and be ready for the classroom. So,
well, I think you can have that too, but also business day for the kids, because they can see where they're going to be, what's it like, get acclimated. I mean, every child wants to feel comfortable, and I know how they like, my son is, he likes continuity. He wants to know where everything is just to feel comfortable. Because you can't say they can't know where the campus is if they get lost, and I wouldn't want that to happen.
I believe that we will have them up there before school starts, but I honestly, Mo, if you saw the classrooms right now, I wouldn't want to have the kids in there. There's still boxes and desks and things that haven't been moved. It's not safe yet, because we're creating a program and are moving a program into a facility that we weren't expecting to move it into. Our maintenance and everybody, our teachers, we're having the teachers come in and do a lot of work to get it ready. They've been in there all day today. They'll be in there again tomorrow. Our goal would be to get them in there, and the first thing they're going to do is, as soon as we're up and ready, send out an email to all of our parents, here's when we're going to have an open house and get everybody in.
Okay, so you think like Wednesday, Thursday?
I would love for it to be Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay, correct.
That would be fantastic, but I don't know that. Some of it's out of my hands because I don't run other departments in the district. So.
But everybody understands that this is a priority
to
get this,
know.
This
yeah,
setup.
Everybody
right.
Thank
you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we go into transition. Oh, excuse, one last part, then they're non-public. If we're not able to support a student in any one of our programs in the district, or a student has needs that are beyond what we feel that are within the confines of the district, it could be some behavioral issues, it could be some self-injurious behavior, anything like that, then we would look at contracting for a non-public school. We really try to keep students within our school setting because it's important for them to be with their peers in their community. And when we send them out to a non-public, sometimes they could be up in Oceanside, they can be down in San Diego, and that's not necessarily their home base. Transition services. When we talk about transition services, all of our students, when they turn 18, we start talking about transition, or excuse me, 16. We start talking about transition and what that looks like for them when they're going on to high school, going after high school. What are their goals? What do they want to do? So transition, as defined by IDEA, is to improve academic and functional achievement and to facilitate movement from the school to post-school activities. So whether it's post-secondary education, vocational education, integrated employment, continuing and adult education, adult services, independent living, or community participation. So what is that going to look like after high school? Every single student, when they turn 16 that has an IEP, gets a transition plan that's developed. That's based on the student's strengths, preferences, and interests. Included in that is instruction. So what type of instruction would they need? Related services, community experience, development of employment, and then other post-school living activities. And what would that look like? What would those objectives be for them when they're going to be out of school? And then there's mandates that develop of a plan that summarizes the skills and strengths of the students, their transition readiness, and what are those needs and what do we need to work on? Transition services themselves determine a student's ability and interest, and we do that via assessment. And I know one of the things, I'm going to thank one of our parent community action committee for NICSE, a parent that I have had the pleasure of meeting. It's going to help us with some transition assessment and what does that look like. And there's not a lot of great assessments out there, period, when we talk about assessment, but we're really going to work hard to find a good combination of assessments, even if we are developing our own, to really look at what do students need in order to be successful. We develop the EITP, when we look at education, employment, and there's two factions of employment that we can look at that are programs that we are supported through different various grant funds that I'll have Mr. Molina talk about in a minute. And then we have to train our staff. What does that look like for our students when they go out into the community? And Nathan, if you would mind talking a little bit about our employment and workability.
Hello. So as Mrs. Wadley shared, my name is Nathan Molina, and I coordinate the San Diego Special Education Vocational Education Programs for our district. Thanks to you and to the community members for your interest in our programs. I just want to start by saying San Diego is fortunate to have two programs that support the vocational skill development of our special education students. Those two programs are called Workability 1 and the Transition Partnership Program, which is usually initialized and shortened to just referred to as TPP. To highlight or just emphasize how fortunate we are, only one-third of the qualifying districts in California actually receive Workability 1 funding. And we're only one of six in San Diego and the only district in our SELPA that receives funding for TPP. Workability 1 is a grant. It's renewed on an annual basis, and it's administered by the California Department of Education. TPP is a cooperative contract that's renewed on a three-year cycle, and that's entered into with the California Department of Rehabilitation. It's important to understand that the supports provided by either program do not constitute special education services like those highlighted by Mrs. Wadley. They're support resources that assist our special education department in working on and developing the vocational skills of our students. It's also important to note that neither program encroaches upon the general fund. Each of the two programs really focus on, and just to boil them down, they focus on two specific areas. They focus on service to the student and to placement of the student. Our two programs are funded to serve at least 278 middle school students and 507 high school students. As well, our programs are funded to place at least 126 students in paid placements. With respect to paid placements and work experience, there have been some significant legislative changes in the last 2 years, both federal and state, that have really impacted the provision of work experience or paid work experience placements via these two programs. So while our special education department is extremely grateful for the relationships and the collaborations that we've developed with our local business community, we always have to be aware that when we're partnering with them, we're partnering with businesses that have well-established standards of employment, and we need to be conscious of those standards and promote those students who have the highest level of work readiness to participate in those paid work experiences. Given that, Workability can also participate in placing students in unpaid vocational education opportunities, and those are opportunities whereby students have the ability to practice and learn vocational skills in a natural work environment.
May I ask, you said there's been some changes over the last few years, so is that impacting how employers get some sort of credit, or what change is it, and how is it impacting us in place?
The change is specific. It's a reauthorization of the Workforce Innovations Act, and it's now called the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act. And really what it boils down to is it's an accountability measure. So whereas there was an insistence and a fight for, rightly so, individuals with disabilities to have access to work experience opportunities, this is really about now figuring out or having districts able to determine what progress students have made by virtue of the education that they've been given related to those vocational skill opportunities. Does that make sense?
So I guess my question is there some sort of paperwork or something else that's been added that's made it?
As far as the minutiae of these two programs are concerned, yes. You know, I don't want to bore you with all those details.
Okay. Sounded like it's reducing.
Just for example, we spent an entire year amending a very small portion of our TPP contract. It just took that long to do. Department of Rehabilitation is really kind of operating on the fly to address and implement all of these changes into the contracts that they enter into with their third parties. So, yes.
So my short question, I think, would be, so it's getting between us and trying to help place our students?
What it's doing is it's giving us more focus on how it is that we're placing our students. And so, you know, we're always working by the standard of, and what I was trying to highlight there, is we never have the ultimate say in whether or not our students are granted a work experience or are offered employment. You know, that's all business related. So we work on developing relationships with those businesses, understanding what their needs are, so that we can improve the instruction to our students to best prepare them for those opportunities.
So I have a question. As you said that we don't find out if they're hired after their experience, is that what you're saying?
That's
so
a goal.
Why is that? Because then that would be reaffirmation that we're doing a good job if they got a job. So why
Absolutely.
Would we not survey the kids to find out if they got a job?
Well, one of the functions of Workability One is to actually follow students 2 years after graduation to determine what it is that they are doing, if they've been involved in education within the last 6 months, or if they've been employed for the last year. So I have that information that I can provide for you.
So what is the percentage? So how many kids have we had gotten jobs?
You know, I off the top of my head, I couldn't give you that percentage right now. I could give it to you this evening.
Yeah, it would have been really good if we had it tonight, because this is really important, because I mean, that's where all this is going, so the kids can get jobs. You know, I'm kind of confused, because I know we were at a meeting, and they were saying there wasn't a cash register at the ATP program. We have cash registers at the site, so that kids can learn that skill.
That's certainly something, and one of the things that I want to highlight with this as well, is that these two programs are supplemental. You know, special education has a mandate to provide transition services mm-hmm. for students in order to develop the skills necessary for post-secondary life. So as far as cash registers being available on campus, I absolutely believe that as part of new curriculum that's available to students on campuses, that should absolutely be a part of it.
But so we do have cash registers on site. I don't know. That's why I'm asking.
We have not had cash registers on site before. That was something that was requested of parents. We will have a cash register that they will be able to use in the adult transition program. The one of the issues that we run into.
Hey, Jack, where'd the cash register come from? Did we pay for it, or did the parents pay for it?
We will be paying for that.
We will be paying for that.
Okay.
Yeah. So one of the issues that we do run into, if anybody's ever gone shopping, which I think we all have, is they're not all the same.
Right,
so they're not all the same. And with some of the newer technology that's coming in, it really does prove a challenge is to figure out which is the best for our students to get a handle on. First and foremost, I want kids to be able to count money. So if we can just develop a vehicle for them to be able to count money and be accountable for their own money, as well as if they're working and they're actually exchanging money, what that looks like. But the actual cash register pieces itself are a little more complicated because there are so many versions out there that so many retailers, it's very different.
You just pick the top five.
Yeah.
I think there's a universal one. I actually know someone who has a company who's got that. And back to the money thing, we're just doing that now. Why are they having a...
That's been going on. Yeah, most of our students that have been in our programs at the high school have participated in some type of on-campus job or coffee cart or something that some of our kids have done, and so they have done a lot of work already that's been campus-based work. But it's really getting out into the community doing community-based work now as they matriculate forward.
Okay. And Missy, real quick, just to jump back in, I thought I understood you asking about the percentage of students who have graduated that have actually worked. I can tell, and I don't have that information. Where they got a job after that. I said, because if we find out how many kids through this program were able to get a job, and I don't know how many businesses you have, that'd be interesting to know that, how many partners, did they succeed in getting a job at that point? Right. Because if they got a job, that would tell us we really are doing a great job.
Well, one thing I can share is that this year, so 16-17, we did place 136 students in a paid work experience or were hired directly by an employer. Okay. So that's a number for this year.
But they don't keep them. And
that's where I'd have to go back in and look at our follow-up data from last year.
Why can't we make that mark as part of the survey? Is that would be the most important thing to know if kids were actually got a job after that.
If we have accurate emails and data, then we do
that. What about emails now? The parents who email now mess it up. Okay, thank you.
So I want to give like a 3-minute warning here because we need to get to public comment. So
I'll jump out. That's a brief overview of each program. If you have any questions or are interested in more information about the programs, you can visit our program websites on the special education link at the district website, or you can contact me directly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
This is just a quick flowchart of transition services, and I know we're crunched for time, so I won't spend too much time on that. We're doing continuous improvement, so the work that we've done over the last several years in special education. We had the FICMAT study. I will, as we put together the special education website or the page, however you want to call it, I want to make sure that we will have that copy of the FICMAT study on there so that our parents and our staff can see that. I know some of our staff has. We also had an ATP consultant that came in and looked at our ATP program, our adult transition program, and provided us with a report that we will also make available on the district website as well. And then we're going to continue to focus on the curriculum and our fundamental courses, which we've talked about at length with our parents and the need for curriculum. Yes.
When was this ATP consultant, when did he do this?
It was just this spring.
The last couple of months. When you say spring, would it be May, April?
It was in March or April. It was not relevant to what's going on now, though. I believe it is. I think it'd be good to have that information because it's going to help what drives us forward.
But, Mark, we wouldn't have had this issue with the parents coming here.
That's correct. Well, this was all put in motion prior to that report.
Right.
There was no possible way. We had the report like midway through this process. So there's
yeah, instead of getting a consultant, why don't we consult the parents? Because if that's the biggest thing here,
we're going to try to finish this presentation if we can.
Yes, please. You know what? This is the only information the board is getting tonight is on this.
Okay. No. Well, it's going to be available. If you'd like to read it, it's going to be on the website. I believe it's great information that can help move us forward.
Vince, our goals, again, we're going to transition our feeder districts. So our five feeder districts coming into San Dieguito, helping to prepare students to come in and what kind of skill set should they be coming in with as a seventh grader, or if they're coming in from Rancho Santa Fe as a ninth grader. What does that middle school to high school skill set need to look like? And then that high school to adult transition, what would that look like? We're looking at a district-wide continuum of services. How can we take our programs that we have? When you look at the information that we've shared previously on the specific programs, how can we spread those out amongst other campuses so that students can stay closer to home and still access the programs that they need? parent communication and resources. Definitely heard that loud and clear. I've had the opportunity to work with the parent forum and continue to work with the parents as we move forward. And then administrative and teacher training, ensuring that they have all of the information that they need. And as things change and move forward, that they're trained in that area. My goals, too, include continuing with the parent forum as I want to engage our parent community in what's happening. Take a look at our how we've added an administrator per site and a parent rep per site so that we can look at what we're going to do down the road. So that when we start talking about what's happening in these parent forums, making sure that each of our school sites are represented in those forums. And then I'll let you talk about, if you want.
Just very briefly, because I know we're pressed for time. But so the board approved a task force to look at special education. I would recommend that it be led by an outside person, that it be led by an outside facilitator. Believe it or not, I received special education services for numerous years for stuttering, and I think it worked. I'll get through it. And I'm married to a speech-language therapist who doesn't provide me much help. That I recommend that it be led by an outside person who is familiar with special education so that we can meaningfully participate. I would recommend that it's no more than 20 to 25 people. That's inclusive of teachers, general education, and special education, parents, district office staff, site staff, some of our related service providers. And we can utilize that document to drive how we move forward. Just real quickly, you know, I think we can all agree that the last couple of months in this district has been quite a turbulent ride. Often it is with these turbulent times that produce learnings of what could have been done differently. I believe in the last several months, through individual meetings with parents, I've had a chance to meet with six parents personally, input provided at board meetings and in separate meetings at Earl Warren to specifically address ATP. District staff has heard numerous concerns. We have also learned, and district staff has worked diligently in the last month or so to address those concerns. As Meredith said, she's already working on the website. We have also learned that much work needs to be done around communication and in creating a community of inclusion at our school sites. But one common theme that I've heard over and over and over is that our parent community wants to work with the district in providing a roadmap for special education. With this board-approved special education task force has the potential to be an environment where members can learn specifics about our special education services, where we can pour into data, and we can meaningfully participate in civil discourse around a continuum of services to ultimately draft a plan around special education over the next couple of years. I believe now is the time to move forward and not backwards. District staff has committed to improving student learning. We've committed to seeking parent input, and we are committed to community engagement through this newly formed task force. I believe that continued pointing of fingers and continued disparaging of all special education services and staff is not going to be productive. That we have listened, our staff has listened, and that we understand, and that now we want the opportunity to work with our community respectfully and objectively to examine issues and to engage with decorum for the betterment of all students. And we are committed to that. And with that, I close.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Miller.
You're welcome. All right. We've got five speaker slips.
Okay.
So we want to.
First will be Kathy Scarapa.
No,
that's me.
Only if we have time.
Okay.
You can go ahead and begin. We want to make sure we can get through.
And then when we say who's on deck will be...
May Mar is next.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm Kathy Scarapa. My son is an ATP student. And there were four things that I came to talk about tonight quickly. One, I think you've already covered. I was looking for Dr. Green's report. I actually met with him because I was invited to participate, and I was curious as to what had happened to that report, what recommendations have been made, because the ATP program needs a lot of work. So I'm glad to hear it's going to be on the website, but I can't wait to read it, provide some feedback there. Number two, as we talk about staffing levels, obviously the number of students in this ATP program is going from, what did you say, 20 to about 40 or so.
27.
And we had 3 certified teachers last year. Now we're going from 20 to 40, and I'm still hearing we only have 3 certified teachers. And I'm just curious how you feel about that ratio. I'd like you to take a look at that. I mean, I think it's a concern. And whether we've also looked, given the number of new students coming in, we know what their profile is because most of them come from our district, how many more educational aides we may need to keep the program running. I haven't heard anything about that in tonight's presentation. Workability comes up to me. Getting our kids some kind of job is really key, but also training and also taking a look at every kid and not just putting them in retail. You know, to be honest, a lot of our kids, you want to put them at a cash register dealing with the public of today, the inpatient public of today. We also have to say, well, oh, we're going to buy a cash register. Look how quickly technology's changing. You know, when my kids started at 8 in school, we used triplicates for IEP documents. Now what do we use? There's Apple Pay. Cash is becoming kind of not useless, but fewer people use cash. The ATP program sends home a note saying that kids should have an analog watch. The world's digital. So we need to look at these kids and figure out what are their skills. And it's more than working at CVS. And if that needs to start really early, I mean, who's good with their hands? Who can look at a diagram and figure out how to put a piece of furniture together from IKEA? There's a job for some of these kids. But we need to be creative, and it's time to look. I mean, there's a lot of smart people around here. But, you know, and I'll close with this. I'm concerned about transportation back and forth to MiraCosta and also to the jobs. And the other thing about workability is we finally had job sites around Solana Beach. Now we're going to be up in Carlsbad. What are we going to do? Last year, it took until the end of October for me to get a note home that, you know what, your kid's really not good enough for a job. And now we're going to start looking for volunteer opportunities. The end of October. So, you know, I'm really hopeful that somebody's walking around the La Costa area right now making sure we've got places for these kids. Because now you go from having 20 to having 40. Not all of them do work. But, you know,
it
needs to start now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we have
Maymar. And then Ms. Lynch will be after that.
Hi, thank you for the presentation. My name is Maymar. And, you know, I think we all agree that we don't want to point fingers at anyone, but I think all parents want accountability. You know, what we, you know, so in order for the district to be accountable, we need to see, we just have a presentation on data. And I would like to, you know, the board to look at some of the data in depth, the raw data, how, you know, the data that was shown today come to be. For example, indicator 13, 100% of students age 16 and above had an IEP that included all 8 coordinated measurable annual IEP goals and transition services that will reasonably enable students to meet their post-secondary goals, 100%, right? So we're doing great, right? So I think I have written you guys before, and I have spoke a few times here, and I just wanted to show you, you know, to see if you think that 100% means anything, or it means something, or if it is 100%. My son had was in an ATP program, had a goal called, it's under the education. It says, upon completion of school, I will complete the ATP program and attend a post-school agency. Sounded pretty reasonable at that time, because it's the first year. And 3 months into school, I was like, and I received a stack of worksheet that came home. And I brought a few for you to see. So I just want, before I show you, I wanted to show you what he could do in high school. So I could pass this around. He's doing multiplications. He's doing writing, and just flip through it quickly of what he can do in high school. And then I after 3 months in ATP, this is one of the things that he brought. This is what he brought home. So if you have a chance to see that, you know, I would like to have all of you guys see it before I ask. I wanted to, for some of you guys who have seen it already, raise your hand if you think the ATP worksheets are age appropriate for a 20-year-old student. Raise your hand if you think the worksheets will ensure students' college, career, and community readiness, which that's on slide 3 that was shown. And raise your hand if you think these worksheets represent a curriculum.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Powerful.
Thank you. She's a special ed teacher.
Lucille, Rich, please.
And then Ms. Schenker will be after that.
Yes.
Thank you to the board, and thank you, Mr. Miller and Meredith, for putting that presentation together. I think what I'm struggling with as a parent is what the workshop's supposed to be. What is the purpose of a workshop? And I think I came in here thinking that the purpose of a workshop is, one, to identify the strengths, which I think to some degree did, but also to identify the problems in the district. And that's what I saw missing from this, because we do have a lot of great programs. I am fortunate to have a son, or two sons, who benefited from a lot of support through Ms. Gallo and other people to get them through this. But one of the things I'm concerned about is what was not in this. And I know we can address this at the special ed task force, but in terms of the overall health of the district, I don't think that was really clear in some of these areas. For example, again, talking about Torrey Pines and LCC, that is where the vast majority of our students are. And those programs, especially in math, are absolutely failing. They're not just doing poorly, they're failing. If you look at the LCAP results that reported those, the EAP results that talk about college readiness, 0% of Torrey Pines students with disabilities were college ready. Zero. That's failing to me. And that has to be acknowledged, because those teachers need more support, they need a different way of programming, they need more curriculum, and I didn't hear anything in this that provides that. If you look at LCC, 8% were proficient in math, 5% at Torrey Pines. That's failing to me. That's not just we have some problems. That's a failing program. These teachers have to struggle with so many IEPs and so many activities and different needs and different parents and different communication plans and different aides. Something has to change. If we're going to turn this around, then we have to look at how we program those programs differently. You've heard me come before. If we had courses that provided functional skills, we can get rid maybe of some of these functional skill IEP goals. The amount of paperwork is crazy. The amount of results are poor. We have to change this paradigm. I keep saying, look, if we provide courses to our non-disabled students, we need to provide an equal benefit to the special ed program. I firmly believe what we're asking our special ed teams to do is ridiculous. You cannot have 15 kids with 15 different IEPs and 15 different skill sets and IEP meetings and parents to respond to, like I said earlier, and have these and have good results. We have to look at this differently. Now, you know, going back to the one system thing, I want to just highlight what this one system recognized. That one system report said, we have a systemic dysfunction in California. Achievement levels of students in California are among the lowest in all 50 states. It is time for California to take a lead, particularly in this political climate, to make sure we look at this differently. I would like for this good district to have good programs for special ed. I encourage us to look at the problems so we can be part of the solution. Thank you.
Thank you. Janet Schenker.
And then Ms. Flicker will be on deck.
Hi, my name is Janet Schenker. I had a very lengthy comments, but obviously I'm not going to get to all of them. I've written you before. You've probably seen my name on many emails, and I'm here again tonight. because I really, after I saw this slide presentation online, I said to myself, if the board looks at this and says, hey, this doesn't look too bad, right? You've got 86% graduation rates. You've got 100% on some of these indicators. This doesn't look too bad. What are the parents complaining about, right? That's how I would see it if I looked at this. I want to talk about a parent in the trenches who's been in this district for about 5, going on 6 years, who's been with my kid, obviously, for 19. He just turned 19. And I'm looking at the statistics and I'm saying it doesn't match my reality, and I would venture to say it probably doesn't match most of these parents' realities. For instance, when you look at graduation rates for 86%, I was floored. I said, where do those numbers come from? Are those diploma students? Are those certificate students? Who's defining graduation rates? In my experience, there might be a few kids in special ed that actually get a diploma, but most don't. Most get a certificate and move on to ATP. So my question to you as a board, look closer at those numbers. Ask more questions of the information that you got tonight. Don't just nod your head and say thank you. Really look. This is a time when we can make changes. You're hearing us, Marcus said, and Meredith has said, they're hearing where we're coming from. That's great. But now the board has to work with them and with us to make changes. And so I'm hoping with the task force and if the parent forum is continuing, where's the accountability? Are we being just rubber stamped again? Are you guys rubber stamping whatever the administrators say? Or are we really going to participate? You talked about the reorganization. The reorganization happened, but I don't think any of us were really talked about, well, what does it really look like? All we know is that there's no special ed director. Now, maybe it'll work out better. We hope so. But we're still out of the loop. At least I feel that I'm out of the loop. Some of these math and English statistics, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail. I see my time is running. But some of these indicators, as I think it was May that was saying, some of that stuff is pre-checked, right? I'm glad that Mark heard this. We don't, you know, in our scheme of things of what we have to do in IEP, we might talk about why is this pre-checked, but we're not going to go to the bat over it. We've got too many other things to deal with. But if you've heard that, because that's a self-fulfilling data point for you guys. Oh, we've got 100%. 100% of parents think that everything's okay. Well, it's not, and we don't feel that it's okay. Just one more thing I just want to bring up, because this is my big deal that I always bring up, on the continuum of services and programs. And I appreciate all of the programs that the district has. But, again, as a parent, I see one big group of population that is being left out. And that are the diploma-bound special ed students. That's where my kid falls, and I think there could be more students getting diplomas if they had the right kind of services. I'm glad to see there was something in there about the fundamentals track. Fundamentals are grade level courses, but modified and restructured so that they can deal with the special ed needs of the students. And there needs to be a whole track with all the non-A through G academic courses and electives and other courses that also include some transition services so that my student and other students don't have to choose between a diploma but no transition services. Why can't ATP also include a few of the academic courses that students need so they can complete their diploma while they're at ATP so that my kid can get what he needs and also get his diploma? Why should he have to choose? Your statistics could be a lot higher if more kids were given the opportunity to really complete their diploma and had all of the academic classes that they need to do so. So again, last thing. I just really feel that your board is, you have the opportunity now to ask for accountability, to show your leadership, and to really say to the administrators and to us as parents, we're going to work together and we're going to make the changes. Listen to what we have to say. We're in the trenches. We live this every single day. So please listen to us.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Can we have Amy Flicker next, please?
And Ms. Cheeseman after that.
Julie Cheeseman after that.
That was an awesome setup. I'm going to talk about, hi guys, I'm Amy Flicker, And I'm going to talk about three areas, and a lot of this is going to be short because it was covered in the presentation, so thank you guys. First and foremost, I want to talk about an area that is doing well in special education, and that is the MSLA program. It's relatively new. It started 2 years ago. It's functioning at DeGaño, and as Meredith said, we are moving on to the HSLA program at LCC. So I hope that we can get commitment from you guys that these are two programs that offer kids, just like you said, that are diploma-bound, an opportunity in order to have a future that includes their diploma. It is headed up by an incredibly fearless Carolyn Nunziato, and I do hope that we are able to secure more teachers like her for special education. She is fantastic. The one thing I want to say, though, about MSLA, and this is for the parents that are here that are from the elementary school districts, is oftentimes that is heard about from word of mouth. A lot of times parents aren't really aware of what their options are or what their choices are when it comes to coming out of the elementary school district. So that's something else to just kind of consider. I think that if we can figure out a way to scale MSLA and HSLA, we can reduce the MPS placements. Okay, the other thing I want to talk about really quickly is one of my pet projects, and Nathan's going to laugh about this, is transitions and transition services. I feel very, very strongly that special education students should have some sort of a counseling mechanism specifically for them. I think kids should have some sort of a portfolio, some sort of a runway that starts for them in elementary school. I think we need to be reaching down and going a lot earlier than coming in at 7th grade, and then recalibrating at 16 is nuts. So school is almost over by then. And that is a lot of the time when parents, we've got to own this, you guys, are looking at this for the first time. We need to start also reaching down to those parents and say, we've got to be thinking about this stuff now. We need to be partnering with you guys now, and that means 5th, 6th grade. So I'm hopeful that maybe we can figure out some way, maybe CCA has a model like that when it comes to having some sort of a specialized counselor, but maybe something that we can think about going forward. And then lastly, I just want to talk real quick about placements and caseloads. Again, when kids are coming out of 6th grade, I hope that we have accurate assessments and tools in order to be placing kids appropriately. I've heard oftentimes from parents they're being placed in programs, and then like maybe 6 months into the school year, they're having to rejigger it, and they're having to move around, and that's 6 months wasted. And that's valuable time to a child. And then finally, for the teachers and for the case managers out there, please look at their caseloads. I think they are far too heavy. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Julie Cheeseman.
Hi, I'm Julie Law Cheeseman, and I'm your CNC Web, one of possibly three of us. There's two of us now, and we're hoping to get another one. I've been asking, you know, Teresa for a long time, even before that, Bruce Kramer. You know, there's been a lot of other parents that wanted to be on this, you know, as a CNC Web, helping to get more parents information about special ed. And there was always problems, but luckily, I don't know who pushed it through, but we're finally getting some more parents to help give down information. I hate public speaking, but I've been on the executive board for 10 years. I've been through Cardiff, Encinitas. I homeschooled my daughter last year because it was a big problem, and it was just easier for me because I've had such a different experience in San Diego as opposed to any other elementary school that I just homeschooled. It wasn't even more of the stress of IEPs because it was bad. And I've heard that from so many parents, and I'm such a person, I always just want things. That's why I give my time. We have our meeting on Monday with Teresa and the rest of the board, but I really want to save everybody money. I think these attorneys get way too much money. I think that the problem is there's a lack of communication. I mean, that's like a consensus when we go over the execs. Like, how can we get this information out? So if parents understand, they're less, you know, scared, and then everyone can just work instead of being a fighting type atmosphere, and then we spend a fortune on attorneys, and it's nuts for me. I just, you know, I can't, and I've noticed coming here, there's less, it's, the transparency is just not there. I mean, honestly, I'm just going to say it, Chuck lied to me, okay? And I was responsible. I had so many parents asking about this, you know, ATP, you know, thing, like, you know, And, you know, I asked him, I'm like, what do I tell these parents? And he just, you know, he told us all along it's going to be this 21st century up at ANICSE. We're supposed to, we have this meeting where we have dinner with the, you know, directors, and all the districts go up and say what they did great, and they go up there. Well, he went up there, and he said, we have this wonderful 21st century ATP program. And I thought, along with Joanne Stressett, this is a great program. Teresa came up to our table. She's like, oh, you know, I want to see. I didn't know you were building an ATP program. And he said, oh, yep, I'm putting my hard hat on tomorrow, and we're going to see it. And then I'm like, oh, cool, when can the rest of the parents? I mean, my son's younger. He's not yet, but I still was hoping, because I had so many other parents coming to me. That's my job. So, and I take it, because I really want everyone to work it out. They have RSS at ANICSE. Sorry, I'm not good at public speaking. They have RSS, which you can go to someone, call them, try it. That's the first thing. I always think, try to resolve it, because, you know, by the time, you know, everyone wastes all this money, it's just, guess who's making the money? It's the attorneys, and they love it. They love problems. They're like, yeah, you know, students aren't young. I know all of it. I've been through the trenches. I know too much that, you know, but I really think if we could just work together, we need to get the parents involved. Like, we have to get them involved with new problems. So I just suggest if we could just get more parent input, because we have all these, they're like really, really knowledgeable. They're willing to volunteer their time. I think it would be silly to not just take it up, get that information, and let's all work together and to fix it. And then move forward that way. That's my suggestion.
Thank you.
We have two more. We have Krista Hogan, and after that, Melanie Landers.
So, hi, I'm Krista Hogan. First time I've actually been able to make it here, which says everything about being in the trenches, because I'm finally here. I have my husband went to San Diego, and I have a sophomore at LCC, and I have a daughter with special ed that's coming in to the district. Tonight was the first time I've ever seen any programs. This was the first experience I've had knowing what the district offers me. And I was freaking out, trying to write down everything. Oh my gosh, you know, how am I going to remember all this right now? How am I going to do the placement? And I have a four-year-old that's coming up through the ranks. So I'm going to be here for a long, long time. And tonight is the first of many, many things, because I truly believe I want, even with my daughter going into, you know, her sophomore year, I want to be able to say that I'm super proud of this district, that it has everything that's offered to all three of my children, that it was a great experience. We actually moved into the district for help with special ed because I was told that I was crazy and my daughter didn't have a disability, that I was a bad parent. We actually moved instead of fighting, instead of the lawsuits, instead of all, I just said, no, we're just going to go to a district where we can get support, get her taught, get her educated, support her in every way. Today, I went to school for the business days that I think is 100% mandatory that the kids have, no matter what, bar none. I don't care if the classrooms are ready. You can stand outside the classroom and say, this will be your classroom. Like, you have the kids come and you integrate them. I told her teacher today, if I have to, I will put a henna tattoo saying math across the top of her forehead. If I have to ask it one more time, I'm about to go insane. It is something I think the district, I think you want to be proud of your district, and that's why you're on the board, and this is your life, like, that you're putting into, your time, your energy, your money. You don't just want to sit here and be, you know, barrauded. Work together with the parents. Find out what the needs are. And there's going to be a lot of different, but there's a lot of similarities. We want the best for our kids. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of other places that are doing fantastic things. And we need to find those things. So I have one other thing. I just on the IDA and the least restrictive environment, I haven't found that our general education teachers are educated with special ed. They don't know how to teach them. So we are forced to go into special education. Like, my daughter has no business being in a special education class. She should be mainstreamed, but she can't because the teachers are uneducated. It's awful. It is an awful situation to be in. And she's doing great both ways. You know, it's going to be what it is because I don't have a lot of choice. She is being pinholed into a certain state that I can't get her out of. And it's hard watching it happen. And so I think there has to be a way we can work together, train the teachers, find out what we need, find out, you know, truly what we can do to support our children. So I'm excited for this to work, not the barometer. So okay. Let us thank tell you. You what we need.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And Melanie Landers.
Hi, my name is Melanie Landers. I've been here before and spoke. I was actually hoping to answer Board Member D'Alessandro's question during the presentation about why are more parents filing due process. And I was hoping I could offer some insight that I think is really important for the board and administrators to understand, that the reason that that number has gone up is because expectations have changed. The difference between your students today in special ed and your students 10 years ago is that the entire world of special education outside of school with early intervention, early diagnosis, early treatment has completely changed. My child is 14. When he was diagnosed at 12, we were told by experts that he would never talk, he'd be institutionalized, all these horrendous things. None of that has come to fruition. And I have learned now, after all these years, I have no expectations because he's exceeded many of the things that I thought he would even be capable of. So I think when you look at those numbers, you have to understand that the psychographic information has changed as well. What we parents expect for our kids today is really different than what parents expected 10 years ago. My son, just this summer, just as an example, I purchased an auditory listening software to improve his reading comprehension. In 3 weeks, he's gone up 100 Lexile points. So having watched him evolve through all of these specialized treatments, which are also, by the way, now covered by health insurance when they didn't used to be, things have changed. Parents get to see firsthand that their kids are capable of making improvements and progress. And when I have a child who's coming into seventh grade, who's at like a fourth grade level, and I'm hearing that he's going into a non-diploma Brown program at 12 years old, as a parent with years of time and money and investment we've put into him, there is no way in heck I am giving up a diploma at 12 years old. I don't give up. And now, a year or so later, I fully expect he will get his diploma. It might not be at 18, it might be at 19, it might be at 20, it might be 21, it might be 22. But I think it's important to understand that parents have higher expectations of our kids because they know they're capable. And if you all haven't read the details of the Andrew case that just went through the Supreme Court, I really think you should read the details because that case is a really good example. The child had autism. He was in like third grade, wasn't improving. The school district was saying, well, he's just not capable of improving. The parents said, we know he can do better. They pulled him out. They placed him in private school. They paid for it. They sued. Fast forward 7 years, they've proven in court he's made tremendous progress. So in the end, the parents were right, and actually the Supreme Court decided the parents were right. He was capable of making the progress, and he just was not being given what he needed to succeed. And I think for many of us, especially going through that transition phase, we know that our kids have abilities to make progress regardless of where they are. So I think that's the biggest thing when you look at that data point. Why are parents fighting more? Because they know that the kids can do better.
Thank you very much. And we do have a closed session before our meeting at 6:30, so we'll go into that. But I would just like to say thank you for all of your input. And I know we've heard a lot of it, and we are listening. And I know we're committed to change. If this was not what you expected tonight, that's because there's so much to cover. But we're committed with our task force, with our parent groups, with our restructuring. We really do want to make a difference for your students, for your kids, and you have my commitment on that, and I know the board as well. So thank you.
Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but one of the ideas that we have for the parents is to work with our parents who are in the CAC to help make recommendations of the parents who would be on the task force. So it wouldn't be just us coming up with this one or that one, because we certainly don't want to be accused of stacking the deck. And so Mr. Miller and I have spoken, and that was the idea to rely upon our three parents who are on the CAC with Nixie to help us select.
There were two.
There's only two right now. I thought we were had.
I have the executive meeting is Monday. Mm-hmm. I think it's a matter of us voting on it, and then I think it's September 15th, they have cabinet, which
You guys all meet at Dipsy, right?
Actually, she's on the cabinet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sure. Yep. I get confused. Those governors and cabinet.
Sure.
But then they vote on it. So it's just...
Okay.
I've had extensive conversation with them, so I know that it's...
Yeah. It just
it shouldn't be an issue.
No, I'm stoked. Yeah, we've been asking for a long, long time.
Yeah.
But you know, okay.
What people said tonight about the jobs and about the business days, and I was writing all this down, and about reaching down to sixth grade, that's going to be part of the task force.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Absolutely.
And what you said tonight has to be to meet that demand. Is that part of that task force is you first, right, you need to set a goal. And when I asked Amy about you setting up an educational community forum, I didn't hear back from you. We need to set one of those up so we can get their input and be back and forth between us so they can help us shape
this. I agree. I asked for clarification, though, and I didn't get an answer. I wasn't sure which parent advisory group you were talking about. So
I think it should be open to everyone, but this should be on the agenda so that we can hear from them.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, and we can get something on. I didn't get an answer to
what. I think I did answer you back. I also had the parent advisory group one that I wanted on there, too. Is that what about next agenda? We put that on there to have a community forum. Can we get it on the next agenda?
Okay. Yeah, again, and Ms. Herman and I were confused, and I know she said she was trying to get clarification from you.
So I'm clarifying now. Can we get an educational community forum put on the next agenda?
So in order to form one? Sure.
Sure.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, and we'll have to adjourn so we can do our closed session, but we'll be back at 6:30.